This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, it's been a shocking and trying week for the Biden administration and more specifically for the people of the United States of America. A hurricane hit in New Orleans or down south in Louisiana, and there has been the most appalling flooding. It traveled 1,400 miles and went through seven states, ended up yesterday in New York, where they've had the worst flooding in living memory. It's a shocking situation. Joe Biden appeared early in the week defending his withdrawal from Afghanistan. He also appeared yesterday talking about the vicissitudes visited on the people as a result of this dreadful storm. And of course, as well, a Supreme Court verdict gave reason to worry that the abortion issue might be about to become very, very hot indeed in the United States of America. We're joined from Washington, as always, by Niall Stanage. Niall is the associate editor of The Hill, a very respected Washington newspaper, and that paper's White House columnist. Niall, I suppose we really ought to start with the floods and the hurricane and the problem that that has caused for millions of people there have been a number of people dead. I'm not sure how many. Last count, it was 36. But the devastation caused again right across seven states and 1,400 miles has to be seen to be believed.
Yeah, really quite savage devastation, Eamon. The death toll in the Northeast alone is now up to 43, predominantly in the states of New Jersey and New York State, which account for about 38 of those deaths. There were deaths when this storm first made landfall in Louisiana, and just a terrible situation. I mean, there are hundreds of thousands of people still without power. Obviously, there are people who will never on their own make the headlines, who are facing life-altering circumstances with their homes yes. being destroyed and so on and so forth. So really a dreadful situation.
Now, Joe Biden addressed the nation twice this week, once on the floods. And he did say, as indeed did Chuck Schumer, the senator for New York, echoed the phrase, global warming is not the future, it is here and it's now. And that seems incontrovertible. It's an important statement, nevertheless, because many Republicans, spectacularly in some cases, deny that there is any such thing as global warming, and if there is, it doesn't threaten them in the way that others know it is.
Yeah, that's right. There was a Republican senator some years ago whose name I can't recollect off the top of my head, who brought a snowball onto the floor of the Senate as purported proof that global warming was not real. Then President Trump was rather skeptical of global warming, or at least of whether it was man-made. And there has been a lot of skepticism in those quarters. Separate from people who we might classify as actual climate change deniers, this has until relatively recently been a kind of difficult issue to get real political action on or a sense of political urgency. For years, I think it was sort of confined as a major issue to very environmentally minded people. That is changing, partly because young voters are much more animated by this topic, but yes. also, as you say, because the circumstances, certainly here in the United States as well as elsewhere in the world, do make it such a pressing issue. And we not only the floods that you just mentioned, Eamon, but of course the Western United States has been absolutely ravaged by a combination of wildfires and drought, two things which are, of course, related. So you take this in total, and it's certainly easy enough to see why climate change has become a much bigger issue and a much more ominous one, quite frankly.
Yes, and in California this summer, they had the worst fires they've ever had. We should bear in mind, if anyone has forgotten, that President Trump withdrew the United States from the accords agreed in Paris to fight global warming. And of course, without the United States, that's very difficult. The first thing I think Biden did in his presidency was return America to commitments to those accords. And of course, in November, the British are hosting COP26, which is an international review of what needs to be done. The Biden speech on that was one thing. His speech defending the withdrawal from Afghanistan, the way that war had ended, I found it very powerful, Niall, and his overall argument about the impossibility of turning Afghanistan into what President Obama famously called a Jeffersonian democracy. His reasoning there was sound in terms of blood and treasure and the impossibility of the task, which in his view was completed 10 years ago in 2011 when Osama bin Laden was killed in Pakistan, as it happens. But the rest of the mission to rid Afghanistan of terrorists as being a place where terrorists could roam freely, and that really looks unachievable. We've only got to see ISIS-K and the Taliban and indeed Al-Qaeda, no doubt in due course, will be back there. The weakness in his argument was about the way it was done, and it was chaotic. A lot of their people left behind, a lot of Afghans who committed to the British and American attempts abandoned, really. That part of it seems very unconvincing. No mention of an intelligence failure that allowed the Taliban to really sweep through the country and take Kabul overnight. And the withdrawal of American air power was a considerable factor in the Taliban's ability to take the country immediately, as opposed to months or maybe as many as 12 months. That is a failure, clearly. He didn't really address that at all. How damaged, though, is he? Because all the reports we've had are that American people don't want to fight other people's wars, and they do not want any longer to be the world's policeman.
So on precisely that point, Eamon, there's a brand new poll out just within the past hour or so from the Washington Post and ABC News, and I think it makes for fascinating reading. It suggests that Biden has been quite significantly damaged. His overall job approval rating is net negative for the first time in his presidency in that poll, 44% yes. approving and 51% disapproving. But the more interesting finding to me concerns Afghanistan and the kind of dichotomy that you mentioned between people who believe the underlying policy is correct, withdrawing, and people who are dismayed by the manner and chaos and bloodshed of that withdrawal. So yes. this poll asked people, it gave people three options. Do you support withdrawal and Biden's handling of that? Just 26% of Americans agreed with that. Do you oppose withdrawal? Only 17% agreed with that. But yes. do you support withdrawal and disapprove of Biden's handling of that withdrawal? 52%. So
yes.
That really tells the story, I think, and goes to exactly the point that you raised in your question.
Yeah, the competence of the United States is called into question. And again, of course, the 13 dead soldiers and many injured, and of course, dozens of Afghans who were killed brutally in that airport attack by ISIS-K, as they're known. So it's clear that his presidency has been damaged significantly by the manner of the botched manner, really, we'd have to say, mm-hmm. of that withdrawal, rather than the withdrawal per se.
I think that's right, yes. I mean, there has been quite widespread support for withdrawing from Afghanistan for quite a long time. And in fact, that same poll that I just cited also found a majority, 54%, who didn't think the war in Afghanistan was worth fighting overall at all, which is quite a startling conclusion for people like you and I who are old enough to remember the American public mood in the wake of the September 11th
yes.
attacks, almost exactly 20 years ago. But I think you're right, Im. The botched, as you put it, withdrawal was a huge issue. And on that speech, in that speech at the White House, and I was there in the room for that speech, Biden cited the evacuation as a success. Now,
yes.
if he sincerely thinks that, I think he's the only person in America who thinks that. I don't believe he does. I think he's just trying to defend himself. But, I mean, even among Democrats, there is very widespread dismay about what happened and also questions about who should be held accountable for exactly the kind of failures that we're talking about, both of intelligence and of logistical planning.
Yeah, it's hard to assess, I suppose, at this juncture, how badly he is affected by this. But the midterm elections are not that far away, 14, 15 months maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And all political eyes on that now, because those midterms, Niall, can make him, if they go wrong, and they're highly likely to, because any incumbent party in the White House loses, don't they, at state and House level in midterms?
Almost without exception. I mean, it's only yeah. in very unusual circumstances, like, for example, the Republicans gained in the first midterms after 9/11. But I think
yes.
that has happened something like twice in 60 or 70 years at this stage. And, of course, Democrats are defending extremely narrow majorities. I mean, in the Senate, they're not really defending a majority at all. It's 50-50 right now.
Yes.
And Vice President Kamala Harris holds the casting or deciding vote. In the House, Democrats could only afford to lose a handful of seats. Basically, Democrats need to break with historical precedent if they are to hold on to these majorities. And the chances of that do not look great at this juncture. Though, of course, you know, I suppose we should add the caveat, Eamon, that things can change extraordinarily quickly in politics. I mean, a month ago, we didn't think that the Taliban were going to do what they did in Afghanistan. So that just shows how quickly everything can change.
But you have your own Taliban in the United States, if I can be forgiven a bad taste joke. And one of the things that are going to affect these elections are the new voting rights laws that are in some states now, and I think that have been approved by the Supreme Court.
Well, there's a whole broad range of laws that have been either pushed or enacted in some states. There are a lot of very controversial restrictions in those laws about, you know, not giving people water when they're standing in line to vote and things of that nature. The widespread suspicion, of course, is that a lot of these laws are aimed toward in effect disenfranchising non-white voters, even though, of course, you can't say that explicitly. But a lot of them seem geared toward having a disproportionate effect on non-white communities.
So as we stand now, Niall, Joe Biden faces the 2 years of being a lame duck president. That is a very serious consequence for us all, isn't it?
It is. I mean, it could really stymie Biden in a big way if his congressional majority is lost. He has so far, you know, enacted a COVID relief bill that has got widespread approval. He did get an infrastructure, a $1 trillion infrastructure bill passed. But there's a bigger bill, a $3.5 trillion bill, that looks imperiled even since we were last speaking, Eamon, because Joe Manchin, the very moderate or centrist Democratic senator from West Virginia, wrote an opinion article in the Wall Street Journal, which is a fairly conservative editorial page, at least, very good newspaper, but very conservative editorially. And he said that he wanted to basically press the pause button on passing that bigger $3.5 trillion package. And of course, because the Senate is split 50-50, that would effectively doom the chances of that legislation passing unless Manchin can somehow be shifted from that position.
Yeah, and Manchin is a senator from a state that went heavily Trump in the election, isn't that right?
Oh, yeah, something like 40 points from memory. I mean, a huge margin to Trump, yes.
And it makes him one of the most powerful men in the United States at the moment. Mm. Another issue, this really is points to the Trump effect and the Mitch McConnell effect, who was the Senate Majority Leader when Trump was in office. One of the things that Trump achieved was to pack the Supreme Court and install justices who were extremely conservative, and abortion is back. And one of the things that made McConnell, I understand, I'm sure you'll tell me if I'm wrong, McConnell doesn't like Trump, but one of the things that he did like was affecting the judiciary all the way down, not just in the Supreme Court, but all the way through the lower courts. And abortion has come back with a vengeance this week. And the Roe v. Wade decision, which was pro-choice effectively, I think it was passed in 1973 or thereabouts, that might be threatened now because of a ruling this week in the Supreme Court, which is extraordinary.
It is extraordinary, and I'll try to explain it in as clear or simple terms as possible. Texas passed a law a number of months ago, which only went into effect on Wednesday, and it essentially bans almost all abortions in that state, because it says that an abortion should not be carried out once a fetal heartbeat can be detected. A fetal heartbeat can generally be detected around 6 weeks into a pregnancy. That's before many women even know they're pregnant. And providers in Texas estimate that this law would stop somewhere between 80 and 90% of terminations that would otherwise take place. Here, I think, are the two really salient points that have outraged people, not only on the left, but primarily, I guess, of a liberal disposition. One is there is no exception for cases of rape or incest. Abortion laws often carve out that provision. The other is a bizarre mechanism in the Texas law, which gives to citizens the right to sue civilly anyone who assists, or as the phrasing has it, aids or abets an abortion. Now, you can't sue the woman herself, but you can, at least theoretically, sue anybody from a friend who takes that woman to an abortion clinic to, as I say, at least in theory, a taxi driver or someone who gave someone a lift to an abortion clinic. And if you sue under those circumstances and win, you're entitled to a minimum of $10,000 per abortion. So it's a bizarre provision. The Supreme Court had the opportunity to halt that while broader while it undergoes broader legal challenge, and they declined to do so in a decision that they announced late at night in the middle of the week. And as a result of all of that, abortion is suddenly back in the middle of the political stage here.
And Roe v. Wade being the iconic case back in the day that more liberalized abortion dramatically.
Yes, that's right. To make a long story short, effectively said that the Constitution includes a right to privacy, and that that right to privacy encompasses a woman's choice to have an abortion. Now, there are some restrictions. Courts have not held that right can be enacted when there is a possibility that the fetus could survive outside the womb, which is typically sort of 22, 23 weeks into pregnancy. But yes, broadly speaking, Roe v. Wade is the whole underpinning of the right to abortion on a nationwide basis.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
Now, this underpins this particular case, this particular law, as indeed does the United States' decision to leave and to lay aside the Paris Accords, which it had agreed. It absolutely shows us how the presidency can be powerful in the hands of even somebody as unsuited to it as I think most people agree Donald Trump is. And Mitch McConnell has, you know, supported him to the hilt, despite, by all accounts, detesting him. Because the Trump presidency in its 4 years delivered in areas such as the Supreme Court, but also all the many of the lower courts. And that is part of the Trump legacy. The ignoring of the possibility of climate change is another, as indeed is the weakening of NATO, the UN, and his disagreements with European leaders. All of this is, if you like, part of his legacy. Some of it is really shocking. And we don't quite get it, I feel, in Europe, how issues that we think are important, but not powers we didn't know a president could wield, are really, really important. And when you're voting in the United States, and we're going to come to the Gavin Newsom and what's happening in California in a minute, when you're voting in the United States, you're doing something that will affect the whole world in many ways. Afghanistan, abortion, and hurricanes.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. Firstly, the president, any president, has very significant executive powers, particularly in the area of foreign policy. And Trump used those powers, as every president does. He used them in very different ways on things like climate change. But I think the point that you raise about the judiciary is absolutely vital, Eamon. And in fact, someone who I was a source of mine this week was talking about the fact that the Supreme Court, in this person's judgment, could well end up being Trump's most lasting legacy. And I think that's a completely valid point. Supreme Court appointments are lifetime appointments. That's one thing. And Trump appointed three of the currently nine judges on the court. The last one of those he appointed, Amy Coney Barrett, soon before leaving office, is 49 years old. It is easily plausible that Ms. Coney Barrett could be on the bench for 30 years. She will
or more.
She will affect not just law, but societal rules or standards in the United States for the rest of our lifetimes. I mean, it is an extraordinarily influential position. And just to not to hopefully go off on too much of a tangent, but we should, I think, highlight Mitch McConnell's role in this and the kind of pretty appalling double standard that he used in the waning days of the Obama administration. McConnell blocked for about 10 months Obama's nomination for a man called Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court.
Yes.
He did that on the purported basis that a president shouldn't be able to appoint someone that late in their presidency. When Trump, he successfully blocked Garland. Whenever Trump appointed Amy Coney Barrett at an even, or nominated Amy Coney Barrett at an even later point of his presidency, McConnell expressed none of the objections that he had expressed in Obama's day and rather gleefully helped Amy Coney Barrett onto the bench. So there we go.
Yeah, and of course, Merrick Garland is now Joe Biden's Attorney General. Just to make another point about this abortion ruling. My understanding is it passed 5-4. So it shows how tight the numbers can be. Just to underline how tight the numbers can be and how much you affected by being able to appoint three Supreme Court justices.
That's right. I mean, in that 5-4 ruling, the Chief Justice, John Roberts, actually joined the three liberals in dissent. Roberts is a pretty conservative guy, appointed by President George W. Bush. But even though he joined the dissent, wasn't enough. I mean, they still lost 5-4. Now, a few years ago when the ideological makeup of the court was different, if you had Roberts and the liberals on side, that would comfortably have carried the day. So it does just show how important the numbers can be and how big an influence Trump has had through those three staunchly conservative appointments, Amy Coney Barrett, Brett Kavanaugh, and Neil Gorsuch.
Now, just to confirm how extraordinary the American election system can be, the governor of California, Gavin Newsom, is facing what I think is called a recall election, the rules for this are extraordinary, and I know you're going to tell us what the rules are. Why is he being recalled? That is, you need only 100,000 vote signatures or something, or whatever you need.
Yeah.
And then he's got to face a new election in the middle of his term. And, you can take it from there.
Well, it's
scary.
It's a mad system, absolutely. So this is a California-specific thing. I mean, other states have their own recall statutes, but this is a particular California thing. And as you say, you only need a relatively modest number of signatures, given the size of California, an enormous state, the most populous state in the union, to set a date for a so-called recall election. It's going to happen on September the 14th on this occasion. And what it means is that the public, via that petition, say, yeah, we know this guy was elected, but we want to kick him out. Now, to prevent that fate, the incumbent needs an overall majority, 50% plus one of the votes cast.
Yes.
The thing that makes it mad is if he or she loses, there's no runoff against the top person running to replace them. If they lose, the next person becomes governor. In California, this time around for the governorship, there are about 40 candidates running. So it is entirely possible that Newsom would get 49% of the vote, would be kicked out, and someone like Larry Elder, the leading rival, a very extreme conservative, a black Republican conservative, could take office on half the votes that Newsom got, or fewer than half. That's around where Elder stands in polls at the moment. So it's a kind of wild system, but we'll see the outcome in a little more than a week.
And just finally, to underline Mr. Elder's credentials, he's facing two charges of sexual harassment of women. And in his defense overnight, he said the following. He said, "I wouldn't need to defend myself." This is of one of the complainants. "I wouldn't need to defend myself. All I'd have to do is show you a picture of the woman who's making these allegations." This really, I mean, the story itself is scary, but the caliber of people who get to run as Republicans is pretty low.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just catching up on those remarks now, but Larry Elder has a whole history of very incendiary remarks, particularly about women, also about climate change. I mean, this actually, you know, goes to something that you and I have spoken about before, Eamon, which is this sort of populism is too nice a word, really, a kind of demagoguery or cartoon or pantomime-like approach to politics, which has exerted an enormous influence over particularly the Republican electorate, and I think is a very negative development for American civic life overall.
Okay, on that rather somber note, Niall, we'll leave it. We're very grateful to Niall, of course. Niall Stanich is associate editor of the Hill newspaper, and his stuff is really, his writing is very, very good. And I'm sure if you want to access it, you can find out more about what's happening in the most powerful democracy of the in the world. Niall, I'm beginning to get worried. We're grateful to Niall, of course, and to all of you for listening. That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.